Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm really engaged.
What? Engaged in what?
I feel like I'm really engaged in the format of cultural production and creativity and things like that.
Is that just in general or today?
Yes, particularly today, because the guest we have is a visionary in a very cultural. Funny cultural content.
Yes.
He's not actually a comedian as such, but I think he could well be.
I mean, could tell a joke.
To be honest, I think he should have his own stand-up show.
Because yeah.
The times I spent with him, he just makes me laugh nonstop.
You were crying, yeah.
And when I first met him, it was with you, and it was at the BFI Awards party.
Well, there was a Persol sunglasses party that Ranking was...
A photographer.
Yes, was photographing, and yes, it was to do with the BFI, and we all met there, so we were all coming.
Yeah, and I started chatting to him, and I just thought, this guy is hilarious. And then he told me about his Instagram or something. I think we wanted to keep in touch, so I followed him on Instagram. And honestly, if you haven't read this guy's Instagram, please sign up to it now and look at it every single day, because it's just like a breath of fresh air and cheers me up.
Yeah, well, he's a weekly journalist for Vogue Online. Yeah. So he writes a column every week, and that's also a link via his Instagram. And we wanted to get his comments on art, really, because we've just discovered that he's come back from Venice for the Biennale.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's got lots of stories about that.
He recently wrote a really funny article, which I haven't read, but it sounds very funny, about art bros and many different...
Well, that's us, isn't it? Are we art sissies?
I'm not sure what we are, but our guest sisters. Today is Raven Smith.
Hello. Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Raven. Thanks for the wonderful introduction.
Of course. How are you?
I'm good. Back from Venice, feeling a little tired.
When did you get back?
Oh, maybe like 5 days ago.
So why are you still tired?
You just
chased the party, chased that high.
Yeah, just been up all night writing about it. So.
Really, for 5 nights?
Okay, no. I wrote about it, it's done, it's out, the piece is out, which is
great,
good, quite nice. And yeah, I did write about art bros as well, and I think it was scathing. It wasn't necessarily nice about art bros. I tried to categorise them, and I just got to two categories, which is, since you ask... The Toad of Toad Hall types, and they're like quite bookish, and they always seem to have like a penguin paperback, and they're quite sensible. And then there's the like Justin Bieber ones, and they're like covered in tie-dye, running around Art Basel Miami, just buying art in their trainers.
But these people both can fund their art collection.
Yeah, of
course.
One's
like an oligarch, and one's like a young trust fund kid.
Yeah, sure.
Why do you call them bros, though? Why are they bros?
They're just called art bros, and they're that, like the latest accessory for a successful kind of woman in the entertainment industry.
Oh, I see. So if you're like a powerful, successful, independent woman,
Jennifer
then
Lawrence.
They seem to be having these art bros as their boyfriend.
Jennifer Lawrence, Sienna
it's
Miller.
Cultural phenomenon.
I also think it's quite nice, you know, the kind of big Hollywood industry kind of it can eat itself with everyone dating each other, so it's quite nice to branch out into a painter or a sculptor.
It's quite nice to bag a gallerist, basically.
Absolutely.
If you're an actor. Totally. Yeah. I think that's also, there is a crossover, because William Morris Endeavor, who I'm actually with in the States, but they now look after Frieze Art Fair. This year was the first year Frieze LA, where they took all of their talent, parenthesis, around all the booths, and it was like a complete cross-pollination of worlds, and that's becoming, you know, that's actually happening now all the time.
Yeah, totally.
Mixing in. And we're doing it ourselves. We talk art.
Yeah. And also, I'm a gallerist and I'm single. Hello.
Oh, okay. So what do you want to bag another gallerist or you want to bag an actor?
You're going Hollywood.
No, I thought we were going Hollywood, babes.
Oh, okay. So you want to bag a Hollywood actor?
Well, yeah, he just said that Hollywood, yeah.
Got it.
It's a natural pairing.
It's totally natural. I mean, yes. You know. Great.
You would suit a strong female. So let's go back to Venice. So yes. you went out to Venice.
Take me back
for the Venice Biennale.
Yeah.
Take me back. You were taken out there by Vogue. So Vogue.
I went out with Heist Gallery actually, but I was writing about it for my Vogue column.
What's Heist Gallery? What's that?
That's a really good question. Heist Gallery is a gallery called Heist.
Yeah, spelled H-E-I-S-T.
Yeah, and they were doing their first ever showing in Venice, and they did an all-female show.
Where are they based? London?
I believe so, yes. Right. I should know more.
Yeah. They were paying for your trip. You're like,
yeah, I know, but what they want is for me to... What was exciting for me when they asked me to go out with them was the fact that Rose McGowan was showing as part of this show.
Oh,
so I went
cool.
to see her performance video piece,
right.
And then we went to a panel with her and everyone else, which... kind of didn't go downhill so much as get derailed. There was a very energetic performance by a woman who had like a broom handle, and it was all about kind of patriarchy, etc., etc.
Right.
But then she just thrust me the broom handle, so I spent about 10 minutes with this broom handle.
And you had to hold it in the air. I think I've seen this image
and
on Instagram.
And the second I put it down, someone shouted no. So I just, it was like the Statue of Liberty, apart Cute. From I was wearing a cord suit.
Yes.
Well, so basically you brought the performance down. By putting down
the broom,
you destroyed the performance.
There's something about
people
the
are like, no!
I'm very happy to watch a performance, but suddenly when everyone's watching you,
yeah, that's
it's
quite
not
intense.
Really what I was there for.
No.
So I found it very intense, but also quite fun. My husband was absolutely mortified. He basically melted into a puddle on the floor.
Oh, no.
It was fine.
That's so funny.
So they told you to ask you to go out there to cover this panel performance or to cover the show of female
to
artists.
To see the show.
Do you know who the other artists were? Did you recognise any of them?
Yes.
Who?
No.
Oh,
I'm sure I did, but I'm not very good with names. That's not my
thing. What did you see there that stood out? Like, what did it look like?
At Venice, for the whole of Venice, the thing that I liked the most was the Arsenale.
Yeah.
I just think when you're in Venice, it's all kind of cobbled streets and it's beautiful and stunning. And then you go into this kind of modern clad modern art space, and
yes.
The energy through it is completely different. You're kind of, I don't want to, like WD-40'd through all of this amazing art,
right,
of
yeah,
modern
nice.
Art, which I love in a way that in Venice it's very hard to get
so
around.
Venice is quite
you're always lost
quite
in
squeaky,
Venice, which I love.
Quite squeaky, and then you get
yeah, that's its charm, but then suddenly you're not lost at all. You're in a beautifully curated space that's leading you from one good thing to another.
What did you see there?
Really, another really good question. What did I like at that? There was an artist, I actually should have written them down, but I'm also writing about it for someone else. But there was a lot of work that made me, for me, a great piece of work is quite witty. So anything that doesn't just look nice, but also has a kind of...
It leans on something
it's
else.
It's like falling in love. I can't explain exactly what it is that makes something speak to me specifically, but it always has a kind of... lyricism, but there's also a literalness. It's that kind of nice meeting of the two.
Wow. Cool. So you didn't know, fall in love in anything in particular?
I fall in love with artworks all the time, but I'm much more of a... I just... The thing is with Biennales, well, the ones that I've been to, because you are looking at so much stuff, it's very hard to be arrested repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I find is a week later, I'll just remember a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Yeah, exactly. It's like visual overload, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I must actually say, I've actually got lost before in the Arsenale, which yeah. I know sounds ridiculous, but if you take a wrong turn,
yeah.
you end up like in a kind of outdoor space that you're then locked out and you can't get back in. That actually once
out.
Happened to me, seriously. So it's quite terrifying
yeah.
as well. So it's not all easy going in the Arsenale, but I love the Arsenale.
Yeah, I think for me, like the art, I know that there's like a real leaning towards neons that say words, and the people are really going nuts for them at the moment. But there was a neon human being in a dark room, so you can see the lungs and,
oh, wow.
and the brain. It's stunning.
Oh,
and
cool.
I should really look up the name.
Well, we can find that out and we'll post it on our Instagram.
Great, thanks.
Good one.
So it's really stunning.
So have you always gone to like art openings and art galleries and written about them or have you always been kind of following that from a young age?
No, have I always been writing about art? Not really. And I haven't really been writing for more than like 2 or 3 years. It's something that's suddenly come into my remit and has ticked a load of boxes for what I want to do with my life.
Right.
It's suddenly, it's like massively rewarding, really hard. And it's me talking in someone's ear in a way that I've worked for Nowness, for example, for 8 years. And it's brilliant working in a team and producing something all together. But this writing malarkey is just, there's nowhere to hide, which is terrifying. And but that's what's brilliant about it as well.
Definitely.
But in terms of art, I've always had an appreciation of art, I guess.
Yeah.
I remember when I grew up in Brighton, and I remember they bought a Hockney, Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy, and they showed it in Brighton.
Really?
And I drew it when I was like 6, which sounds amazing, but it's a kid's drawing. But
have you still got it?
I've got the kid's. My mum's got the drawing.
No. Yeah.
And I've got
original.
Like a
You've got the original.
I've got the original in my house.
Oh, you've got the Hockney.
Die for a Hockney. I would die for a Hockney.
I know.
Of
right?
all the people who is kind of literal and has lyricism, and I think I like to think that I'm not easy to put in a box, and I feel really like that about Hockney. It's like he's not a type of artist. He's his own artist, doing his own stuff.
Definitely.
And he's always exploring. He's never fearful of new media. He's always up there forefront, the iPad drawings and the video
art. And like
art.
You were saying about being vulnerable, you know, in the sense that when you're writing now, there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
I feel like you feel that with him as well somehow, because he does push himself. Like all his iPad drawings and things like that.
That's what I'm saying.
When they first started, they were super
And people took the piss out of them.
They were super nascent. Yeah, but he just kept at it. And they are quite amazing.
Yeah.
Just
for me, like any good artist is like sitting with you, watching the world, but also stepping outside of it and looking back in. And there's something about like just his kind of when he went to LA and his obsession with like high rise buildings. Like corporate building painting.
Yeah.
He's just distilling that in a way that's like just makes you think about it in a different way.
Yeah.
Which I just find great. There's just something quite matter of fact about the way that he presents himself as well.
Yes,
just
totally.
Like genuine.
He doesn't give a fuck. He's like,
I've always been totally obsessed with his style. I mean, I still look at pictures, and I actually joked with Carl the other day. I was like, when we open the Margate Gallery, I think we should start wearing suits every day to work, because at the moment we never did.
Well, you'd look like Gilbert and George, you too.
No, but not the same suit. Oh. But like, you know, but almost like I want to be as cool as David Hockney.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's got an amazing light pad in Hollywood. In Los Angeles. But you go inside, and it's like the front room of a Bradford like bedsit. Apparently, there's like really all kind of chintzy, and there's like ashtrays everywhere filled with fags.
Yeah,
and there's
I actually went to Sam Taylor Johnson's studio in the hills, and it's next door to his house.
Yeah.
And she sometimes has tea with him, I think, and hangs out with him.
Wow.
And I was really hoping when Carl and I went there that we would get to meet Hockney, but we didn't.
So. Well, apparently, he's deaf as a post, so you can just hear people shouting at him.
I love the fact he got stuck in a lift recently as well.
Did he?
Yeah, there's an amazing photograph of him being stuck in a lift. I'm surprised you didn't post it on your Instagram, actually, with some witty comment, because it was a really great photo of him with the firemen who saved him.
How long have you been working with Vogue?
So my column had its 1 year birthday a couple of weeks
congratulations.
Ago. Congratulations. So I love it. It's just a great, it's just nice to be able to, I think there's a lot of people who are able to write about clothes, and I'm very lucky to have a space on Vogue where I get to write about culture. Although clothes are culture, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all the part of the same stuff, but I get to talk about kind of what's going on right now, what's the zeitgeist.
Do they push you in a certain way, or you kind of have quite a lot of freedom?
I just pitch what I think is current, and then I talk to my editor about that, and if we agree, it's the same thing.
Great.
And then I just, my job is not to kind of conclude, not to try and say, for example, Love Island, I wrote about Love Island. My job's not to say whether it's good or bad. My job is to chew it over with the...
So you're like the BBC, you're impartial.
I am like the BBC. I am the BBC.
You are.
Yeah, I just don't want to... I've just finished a book, so I'm very...
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So and didn't you go to Berlin for that?
I did.
Which I thought was very, like, David Bowie of you. It's like when he went to Berlin and kind of... I always found Berlin such a kind of blank landscape in some ways, a bit like somewhere like Detroit or something. I can imagine like Detroit in the 70s or 80s was this very kind of like, not because it's so industrial and there's such a kind of like history, and it's not like super stimulating visually as a place, and there's often like very empty streets in Berlin, and maybe not so much these days because I think it's been so gentrified now, but there was, you know, if you've gone there even 15 years ago, that you could walk on a street and there'd be no one with you, and I used to find it a place to invent yourself or somehow like create who you wanted to be, which made so much sense to me with David Bowie, because he would obviously go there and made that amazing album there. So when you went there, I was like, oh, how Bowie of Raven. Love that.
So what's the book about?
That was the plan. The book is called Ravensmith's Trivial Pursuits, and the idea is that everything...
Ravensmith's Trivial Pursuit. I'm like, is that your drag name?
Smith's Got it, Trivial Pursuits. And it's the idea that everything in your life, between life and death, they're the big things. Everything is a kind of trivial thing that we're chasing. So I wrote about...
Oh, great.
Being tall. I wrote about...
How tall are you?
I'm 6 foot four and a half. I got half an inch taller from doing yoga for a year.
Shut
up. No.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I'm just about to start. I've never done yoga. And now I'm moving to Margate with the gallery. There's an amazing yoga studio.
Are you
studio.
Moving to Margate?
Oh!
Did
I tell you?
You never mentioned that before.
Did I also tell you that I have meningitis?
No, but do you know that it's Hepatitis Awareness Month?
Is it?
Mate, yes. Oh. So you should all be aware. You should all get like your hepatitis ABC jabs.
Thank you for that really caring,
of course.
Thoughtful comment.
But do you know when Meningitis Awareness Month is?
It's every day in my life.
All right, exactly. Wow, you put on an inch. That's amazing.
I know.
And then to segue onto dick pics, talking about inches.
So I wrote about dick pics.
What did you write
names.
About dick pics?
What I just... I'm again the same as my column. I'm trying to chew over what, like why what these cultural phenomenons that we are all doing and not really talking about. It's trying to get not even have a conversation. Just
we're all doing the fact that we're all sending dick pics, sharing just, dick pics.
Well, my editor is completely obsessed with hole pics because she's never heard of them before, and she's just like,
I find them haunting.
I don't. I was like. Society's literally gonna die. We deserve to just end.
Now. I've had hole pics all the time. On my Instagram direct messaging from randoms, it'd be a picture and you'll click on it and it's just a hole winking at you. And you're like, this doesn't make
this is really disturbing. What is,
there's no body attached to it, it's just bumhole. And you're like, hey, what do I do with that?
Oh my god.
My editor is like, I just had to Google hole pics.
Right.
And she's got loads of people in her office and they're all just like, we've never heard of this, Raven. This is really bad.
This is
really,
dark.
Really bad.
Don't take us down this road, please. Bring us back to the
bench. I also wrote about like baby names and like long lunches, drinking at lunch, all the different stuff that we do. Trivial pursuits, stuff that we're pursuing that is meaningful and meaningless at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's like 15 to 20 at the moment, irreverent essays on modern life.
Do you feel like you're going to go back to Venice in a couple of years, or do you feel like you want to go and see more art exhibitions or Frieze Art Fair?
I really want to go. I love Frieze, but I love Frieze. It's it's sort of the opposite of Venice. Frieze for me is like the antithesis of how, as a viewer, you want to see art. It's just taking away all of the context and making it as simple as possible to see different works, and I understand the power of that when you're looking to buy and the buyers, but for me, I'd rather... There was a great piece in Venice in like a disused church, and it's like actually the context and the way that people are arranging the art is really interesting to me. I love Frieze purely because of the eccentric people that attend
on those
VIP days. Yeah.
It's brilliant. They're just like impossible to miss, and there's just something about really rich art people. They just dress like they don't give a shit.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
Do you think there's definitely a crossover between art and fashion for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that thing of culture. Nothing is existing in a vacuum. So the way, you know, the food that we eat, the plays that we see, the clothes we wear, the art that's being made now, that they're intertwined. I don't think you can separate them out as separate movements. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to see what the movement is when you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll look back on this time. I don't know. I was saying to my husband, like, when we're grandparents, we'll probably say to our kids, oh, that was the era when everyone was on their phones.
Everyone was an influencer.
Everyone was on their phones. I just don't think we're going to be on our phones in 30 years. No,
I think that's great.
It's going to become
news.
The new smoking. It would just be this really
taboo
thing.
I think it's
going
to be like, people would be like, you used to eat meat.
Yeah.
Oh my God, everyone ate meat for hundreds of years. Yeah. And then they realised they didn't need to.
Do you know what, though? I actually think the whole format of the podcast is quite an interesting phenomenon because it's growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
And there's something about having to listen rather than actually looking. Because you even though you might get it through your phone, you then put the phone down.
Yeah.
And it's slowing down. It's slowing slowed me down loads listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite an interesting thing, that it's doubled in, they've gone from like, say, 3 million listens to 6 million listens in a year.
Yeah.
So it's like really, really growing quickly.
Yeah, but we had an interview earlier on, me and Robin, and what was really interesting is that there's a phenomenon now with podcasts that people are listening to them at twice speed. So they're getting all the content need, but they want to get it in quicker.
Yeah.
So it's slightly like short circuit. You're like, I need to listen
to
this. I need to get it in. I've really got the time to listen, give myself an hour, so I'm going to get it all in half an hour.
That doesn't make me feel good.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Crazy. Yeah. So it's weird. It's still this thing. It's like podcasts are slowing people down. However,
you can speed it up. And you're multitasking, right?
I often find myself...
Well, do you wear earpods?
Get back.
Do you wear earpods and go around the house and do stuff while listening?
I walk a lot.
Yeah.
I find it very cathartic. Part of the reason I was in Berlin, I was like, I'm just going to walk. I was writing my book on like a dictation app, so just walking and talking into an app. The job of the book is to try and catch all of those, the opposite of mindfulness. It's actually trying to catch everything as it's passing through your head, through your mind, all those different things that you're thinking and sporadically throughout a day. I'm trying to catch them all and put them on paper and then take a step back and look at what the bigger picture is of all of this stuff. And I find walking with a podcast really helps me just get out of my head, right, in a way.
Okay. Yes.
Anything that helps you get out of your head. But most, like swimming really helps as well. You just can't carry an app with you and talk into it.
Yeah. And yoga, I guess.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
So another place you recently went to was Egypt, is that right?
Oh my God, yes.
And I find it really interesting Raven Smith standing in Egypt, because it's like that was an ancient civilization that was so important and so fascinating. And then you're there looking at our civilization now, and I love that kind of contrast.
It was so amazing. It was magic. I thought it was going to be life-changing. My life isn't changed. It was just a properly magic experience. There's just something so intoxicating about being in the Great
is this
pyramid.
A work trip, or is this
no,
a,
it was a holiday okay. to celebrate finishing the first draft of the book.
Oh.
And we basically, because it's been so kind of chaotic in Egypt, it's still quite quiet, tourist-wise.
Yes.
So there's like six of us inside the greatest pyramid, like the
Amazing.
Last standing of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Six, like me and my husband and this granny, just standing in the pharaoh's tomb.
Wow.
It's just phenomenal. It was, and real like proper
did you
tomb
feel it,
raider shit.
Did you
like
feel in
climbing,
danger there at all?
It's like climbing through a little creep hole, up ascending, and then you'll just come out into this really beautiful cavernous room, but obviously all the good stuff is in the British Museum now,
not in Egypt.
Yeah. But apart from that, it's great.
Did you, as a for the tourist board, did you feel threatened at any point or worried?
No,
or
I think we were both, Richard and I were both concerned. My husband and I were both concerned,
of course,
about being gays in Egypt, and it was just like not a thing. No one looked at us twice.
Would you go to Russia now?
Not right now?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, probably. I just can't be asked to be scared of stuff. I realize that is in some could be seen as kamikaze in some way, but I don't think it will ever hold me back from going anywhere. I think it's not high on my list of places that I want to go, and Egypt always has been.
Right.
Yeah, I want to go Egypt, but yeah. I definitely have trepidations about it.
I mean, I think if you're a white, blonde woman, you're going to get hassled, actually, more than a man.
I was just about to say, though, if you're a man, you probably just you don't get looked at in the same way. It's
no.
Maybe.
And I obviously dressed much more conservatively than I normally do.
Yeah.
I didn't wear open shoes once, which is not very me on holiday. Aww. I was like, I need to just...
Was you in heels the whole time?
Yes, I was. I'm just naked.
Yeah.
I actually went to Beirut about 2 years ago for the first time.
Yeah.
And because I'd grown up in the 80s, when you heard about Terry Waite and all of this very intense political instability, and the fact that it's so close to Syria, I was really nervous going there. But I had the most amazing trip I think I've ever had in my life. I had the biggest welcome from the art community there and from some musicians I know. There's a band called Mashru Layla, who are an openly gay band from Beirut, and it's quite amazing what they do. And they're a bit like the Radiohead of that country. And I just had the most amazing time, like the food, the culture, just the history of the war and the way you could feel it in the buildings. And Carl and I went to see one particular building that was literally on the front of the fighting, you know, years ago. And you could see all the bullet holes still. And it just, I've never been in a building with such negative energy. It was so intense. But it was one of the best trips I've ever done in my life. Yeah. So I actually really...
What was in the building now? What do they use it for?
It's actually an art space.
Really?
And they've taken this old building, they've left it exactly how it was to sort of remind everybody of the intense, you know, human nature, what we all do to each other. But it was really powerful. And actually, we met Janet Street Porter, another great broadcaster, the other day, and she was saying that she constantly tries to visit places that are new for her. And that's still, and even cook new food, you know, different recipes every weekend or something with her husband. And I loved that idea. You know, I think it's important to challenge yourself and go to places, because actually when you get to them, it's not as big a jump as you think it was going to be. Do you know what I mean? Somehow.
I think if you have an experience where you're fucking scared, that's different, but I haven't had one yet.
So yeah, that's true.
I agree with this kind of going to new places. I'm sort of obsessed with being out of my depth. That's kind of what drives me most at the moment. So doing things that I've never done before that I feel really anxious about just before
What's your anxiety bucket list?
Writing a book was a big one. Wow. Like, just writing a book.
Yeah.
It seems like an impossible thing to do. Even now I'm on this side of the first draft, I'm like, why would anyone do that? It's like the hardest thing. I'd said it's like getting sick on an empty stomach. You just have nothing left to give it and you have to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, you have to hit this word count.
So you've got a publisher that's got the giving you notes now.
It's out with Fourth Estate, May 2020.
Oh, right. So it's all the draft's done. Everything's
the first draft
delivered.
Is done.
Right.
The second, I get my notes. I mean, they're due today. So we'll see how much work still needs to be done. I think quite a lot. But I also, speaking of new stuff, I'm trying to get on a cruise ship to do a writer's residency so I can spend the week going to America, 7 nights to America on a ship and just write. I feel like I want, it's weird. It's a bit like the art I like. I really like practical stuff and I kind of really like stupidly romantic stuff as well. So I like the idea of being on a boat
sea. That's so interesting. We met an artist called David Trigley and he was talking about this idea of when you go on an aeroplane. He actually wrote a whole book of poetry about being on the aeroplane.
Yeah.
So it's almost like when you get captive like that and you're a creative person, that limit will free all your creativity. And I used to write songs in my band on an aeroplane. I think that would be a really good idea to go on a boat.
It's part of the reason that Berlin was so good for me. And it felt necessary. I was trying to write in December and it was like every night there's a champagne thing. And I know that that's not a bad problem to have, but there's always a reason to not write when you're living in London with loads of people that you know around you all the time.
Well, you're a very social person as well.
I am a very social person. So I felt like I had to retreat from all of that.
Yeah.
But by the end of the second month when I was in Berlin, I was like hungry, horny. Like, I was just out of energy. I was homesick.
Right.
And I think that showed in my writing. Nearly all of my writing is about, like, how great it is to get drunk in that last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because all I wanted to do was escape my being in my head for 4 months.
Do you think it's good writing, though? Do you think they're quite fascinating chapters?
I think it's just you tap it. Like, for example, I wrote Once Hungover and I wrote great stuff, but you can't just write hungover every day. It's just not sustainable. No. But you know when you're hungover being really fucking funny.
Yeah, amazing.
So I was like,
Some of my best text exchanges when hungover, just like, that was fucking
Yeah, and you're like, so it was a good energy, but it's just, I had to find a way to kind of
curb it.
Reach my word count every day.
What was your word count every day?
1,000 words a day for 60 days is the plan.
How many pages is that?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But 60,000 is what I'm contractually obliged to deliver.
60,000 words. And how many pages is that? 240 or something?
Hundreds.
I
felt every word of it. But it's so great. Once you're in the flow, like you just hit this bit, and I think every creative has it, you just hit this bit where it's almost not you. It's something else. It's coming through you. I don't want, it's not spiritual either, but it's like
it's an inner monologue.
You're hitting this run where it's just happening. And it takes, it's like sex, it's like exercise. You start it, you're doing all the actions for it, you know what you're doing, and then you hit this slalom where it's just like a free fall.
Like,
it's
a great. Like a sweet
you're
spot.
Not thinking about it too much. It's happening, it's great, but you're not outside of it. And then, so it's trying to do that with my writing every day and working out how you get to that bit where I will read stuff back and laugh at it and be like, I can't believe, I remember writing it. It's not like I forget it, but I'm like, I can't believe I thought of that.
Yeah.
Like, you reach this level where, I'm sure it happens to painters, I'm sure it happens to all kinds, you know, any discipline that you're in.
Yeah.
You're trying to hit that creative sweet spot where you're purely creating and it's almost creating itself.
When I used to make music, I used to say to one of my producers, Sean, I used to say to him that if we weren't recording today, this song would never have been written.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big thing about that in a practice, art, writing, music, whatever it is you choose to do, even acting actually, is discipline to actually make yourself focus on it and do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't do that, you're never going to have the greatness. Like, it won't come.
Yeah.
And you have to just keep doing it, because eventually the more you do it, the freer you become and the more open your mind will be to do things.
It was tough. And it's nice to be back with my husband and my cat and, you know, a drink when I want one and not feeling like I should be right. The pressure. And I had to stop reading, which was the toughest thing, because everything I read made me feel inferior in some way.
Compare and despair.
Right, I'm meant to be writing as good as this, not reading as good as this.
And it's almost like you have to realise that literature and the weight of all that on your shoulders, you just have to leave that behind.
Yeah,
and you have to focus on your voice and your interior world.
I haven't written Jane Eyre. I know I haven't. I had to just trust that it was easier the second half. The first half I wrote, my Vogue column is kind of, I try and put less of myself into it. It's meant to be more universal.
Right.
I wrote the first half of my book and I put less of myself into it. It was more universal. And my editor read the first half and she's like, the bits where you talk about yourself are the best bits.
I was about to say, I bet you anything.
It's much easier to write about being a young gay man in Brighton. It was like just pouring out of me.
Yeah.
Just like, look, I was wearing Twisted Levi's.
Also, yeah, I bet you anything.
Like, just, yeah.
That'll be the thing that people connect to.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Do you feel a pro and con pressure to receiving an advance from publisher?
Sort of. The thing is, I've never written a book before. I don't really know that process, that world, the value, the actual monetary value, and whether that's good or bad. But I trust my editor who commissioned the book at Fourth Estate, and I trust my literary agent who helped me negotiate the contract afterwards. I just trust that they know what they're doing. And that I can just keep writing and not worry too much. I think it would be shit if I had to pay my advance back. It would be really, really embarrassing.
Yeah. does that happen?
It'd probably be a second book in that alone.
No, I don't think so.
People don't deliver a book by a certain date.
No, I think it's fine.
But that advance paid for your trip to Berlin, and that's going to pay for you to be on the ship. And
sure.
Got it.
There's not masses of money in book writing.
No.
But it's just like the most... one of the most rewarding things I've ever done.
Right.
The most challenging and rewarding things I've ever done. And the book, essentially, for me right now, is going to be... it's a calling card for my voice forever. I can give that to anyone and they can hear what I'm... it's just such an amazing thing to have.
Right.
When it's of the now, it's very contemporary and very zeitgeisty, isn't it?
Yeah, and like... there was a lot of talk about... I basically, before I wrote it, I tried to read a lot of the now stuff from the past. So I tried to read Susan Sontag, or I tried to read...
yes. You
know, trying to read...
Notes on Camp. And
yeah, like or that, like... yeah. Or who else was I reading? David Sedaris in 1995, writing about being a Christmas elf.
Yeah.
And trying to work out how these things hold up now.
What do you think?
And how do you... it's not a criticism. I wasn't trying to criticise what they were saying.
Yeah.
I think for me, what's interesting is... if you want to write about what's happening now, you have to have some understanding of the heritage of how we've got here. So Egypt, as much... I spoke about Egypt and wanting to go to Egypt as a part of a bigger thing on why we travel, where I've travelled, what's my impetus to see more, what's the point of it?
Do you think these things of the time then have dated, or do you think they hold up?
Yeah, they have dated, but I think it's like watching Doctor Who. The spaceships look like they're from the 70s and the 70s one. They're meant to look of the time.
Yeah.
They're meant to look as contemporary as they can in the moment they're created.
Yes.
So I think that's part of the kind of good stuff of it. I hope that I don't know. You know, there's always a fear about when you make something and you have to put it out in the world.
Yeah.
So it's going to get made the best it can, and then we just have to wait and see.
Did you feel like that about the art you were seeing in Venice, that it felt very like it could possibly date, or it was of the moment? And that's,
it's difficult, because I think I desire things that have longevity, whether that is my boyfriends, or, you know, my husband now, or my, the flooring I want in my house. My architect, I say architect, my brother-in-law hates me because I said, he says, what floor do you want in the kitchen? I was like, I want it to look like it's been here for 100 years. Wow. He's like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, it's not, I'm not like, I want it to be marble. Do you know what I mean?
So, it should just be mud then, shouldn't it?
Yeah,
just,
exactly. Like, dig it all up. Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah, it should just be molten straw, lava at the core of the earth. So I just, it's like, I
you
like things
your
that...
Kids, like, careful.
I'm like, it's been here a long it's hot. Time. Yeah. I like things with longevity, and I think... But it's difficult, isn't it? Because when you look at what the art that people were making in the 60s or the 50s or the 40s or the 30s or whenever, they are... reflect, you can't, you have to reflect the time that you live in some way, or you can make a commentary about the time you live in by using an older practice. Look at Grayson Perry. It's like, it's saying so much to use a certain medium to say something really contemporary. I just find it very, for me, at the Biennale, I think it sort of has to date a bit. I think that's part of the good thing about having contemporary art. That's it. It's of its time. I don't know what period we'll look back at this as.
No, but we're not going to know, are we, until...
No.
But you can probably predict it, and it is quite scary. Even Russell's new TV show predicts what happens in the next few years, and it's quite terrifying, actually. And crazy ideas can actually really come to fruition, can't they? So,
yeah.
Who knows? Yeah, it's quite terrifying. But yes. So we ask every guest that comes on the podcast two questions.
Yeah,
they're really
One is,
tough.
What is your favourite colour?
My favourite colour? I'm going to say... Oh. I'm going to say...
We're like turning the tables on the journalist.
I'm going to say green.
Green?
Great. Well, you're wearing like
you're wearing green
shade
now.
Avocado
I am wearing
today,
an avocado t-shirt that I've resurrected from the back of my wardrobe. It's just... When I see people wearing green, it's quite an approachable colour. It doesn't...
Green?
Yeah.
Because it's like grass, you want to sit on it.
Oh, I just... sure. I'm trying to think. I've got all of my favourite clothes are green, so I just kind of have to go with that.
Do you feel comfortable?
What's your favourite clothes? Yeah.
And also, my bedroom's painted like dark gloss racing green.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Farrow and Ball or Fine
No,
Earth.
Little Brown, they're called.
Little Green.
Little Green, of course.
Little Green.
I used to have a pink bedroom. I was very into pink, and then millennials fucked it up for everybody. So now I'm onto green. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
We also ask if you could do an art heist.
Yeah.
Your touchstone artwork, and you could steal it, so and we're going to help you. You're not going to get in trouble. You're going to live with it forever. What would that be? It'd be any size you want.
I love the idea of the three of us doing an art heist.
Yes.
We need to
all
try
in
and do
green.
This, actually. That'd be a really good night out, actually.
Yeah. Oh, my God, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's really tough. I think I would have to take Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy. I just feel like I can't
You're
not have
the nation.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in that picture that I have tried to replicate and like pull into my real life.
Really?
Like
that
what?
Shag carpet, the cat, the kind of Ozzy Clark's like relaxed, don't give a
flowy
shit
clothing. Yeah.
There's just something about all of the
there's a lot of fabric in that.
The life of that thing feels like the life that you aspire to in some
way. Wow, that's so cool.
A trivial pursuit of sorts.
Right.
So I guess I would take that. Oh, that's tough.
That's really nice, though. That's like a great idea that you're kind of going to make that painting real again. So it was a real situation that he painted, and now you're going to take it back out. I like that.
Sometimes you
like
see people
travel.
Recreate his swimming pool scene with the guy swimming underneath
on Instagram and stuff.
Yeah. I love it when people.
Oh my God, you
paintings.
Should so do a photo shoot at some point for your book and like have you in
of
that
Hockney.
Recreate the
oh
Hockney picture.
You and your husband, and then
you
the
and
cat.
Your husband and the cat.
Don't.
Love that.
Like,
let's do it.
Do it.
Yeah,
that would be so cool.
I wonder where that painting is now. It seems
we'll
like it'd be Moment Collection or Tate Collection, wouldn't it?
Well, it was in the Tate when they had his retrospective, but I didn't see where they put it.
Right.
His paintings travel a lot. I think if you own a Hockney painting, you basically
never
to live with it because the world wants, and it's great to share it with
I'm desperate to meet him, and every email, like, every different thing I've worked on, and I've been like, we should maybe ask David Hockney to do this.
Yes.
Never come to fruition.
I know.
Maybe one day.
Just turn up at the door.
I think you could just knock on Hock's door.
Yeah.
Would he be your dream guest?
The Hock.
Your dream interviewee.
Yeah, probably.
I think he's one of ours as well, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, totally. We love
it's
him.
It's difficult
as well.
Meeting your idols.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would find that really
actually,
tough.
Actually, they really can let you down, so it can be... I won't say who's let me down, but I've been super let down by one
is
of my childhood
me?
Heroes.
You are
you,
his idol.
Are Raymond Smith, you are my childhood hero.
I'm like, I should go. I am let down in the flesh.
No, you're
totally iconic. Loving you.
Thanks. You're a dream. Well, thanks for coming
on.
Well,
we are super excited about reading your book next year.
Yeah, and what's it called again?
Raven Smith Trivial Pursuits.
And do you have an Instagram?
Raven_Smith.
Why two underscores? That's glamorous.
Because...
Can you say Raven double underscore Smith?
You can, yes. Raven double underscore Smith. Whenever I got my Twitter handle, Raven_Smith was taken. This woman who lives in like the way out west, she's a spiritual healer. And
love
she
her.
She has my handle.
Have you ever met her?
No.
You should interview
it's
her.
Too, it's too
it should
meta.
Be Raven underscore Smith. Yeah. Meets Raven underscore Smith.
There are a lot of Raven Smiths on Instagram.
I wonder if there's a Raven really underscore scary. Underscore underscore Smith.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Oh, I'd love to do that.
Do you know what else I wanted to say to you? We were actually meeting a really great actress called Zoe Ashton.
Yes.
And one of the reasons I saw her film Velvet Buzzsaw was because of your Instagram.
Oh,
you
really?
You posted these pictures of Jake Gyllenhaal.
Looking very handsome.
Looking very handsome. He's and so you were handsome. Like me Googling pictures of Jake Gyllenhaal naked. It's a great film. It's so over the top and so kind of overwrought and so extreme. But actually, the longer you watch it, it's really captivating.
Well, like any good kind of comedy, it's really well observed at the beginning.
Yeah.
The way that it takes the piss out of art people, and that is not, I'm not anti-art people.
No,
but
me
the way
either.
That it really plays with that is so interesting. I just literally recently rewatched the first series of Girls, and it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, the observation within it,
right.
not just the storyline, but the fact that the little throwaway moments, and that film was full of those. I know it turns into kind of, you know, the
know,
House Beyond the Pines horror.
Yeah, I know, but I think that's so funny and so
where
brilliant.
Where else is it going to go?
And actually, it needed, that's when it made sense to me.
Yeah.
I was watching it, especially because I'm in the art world.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, almost like affronted by it at first. I was like, what?
Yeah.
This, and then I thought, actually, this is the art world, but probably the art world that I tried to ignore.
Yeah.
But it is actually real, that heightened, excessive, insane personality types. But also there was heart to it. It's particularly her character. I love her character.
Yeah. I thought she was phenomenal in it.
Yeah.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal is.
Well, anyway, thank you for sharing
for handsome
that.
Handsome in it.
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, he's actually really handsome in it.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thanks,
with
mate.
All of that stuff. And to find out more, you can visit his Instagram and read his column in Vogue, and then buy the book next year. And we will be sharing images of the artworks, especially the David Hockney that we've been talking about today, on our Instagram, which is @talkart. We'll be back very soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for
Raven.
Bye,
love.
Raven. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram @talkart, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.